Good morning on Tuesday, May 13th, 2014. My name is Brian Madden, and you are listening to the special edition BrianMadden.com podcast. Thank you so much for joining. I am sitting in a rocking chair in the office of Gabe Knuth in Omaha, Nebraska. Gabe, hello.
Hello. This is weird with you right next to me.
I know, and it's weird that we call this bedroom an office.
Well.
But it's full of computer stuff. I see your badge from American Greetings from when you were apparently 12 years old.
Yeah.
We're tweeting that later.
That's fine. I had a lot of hair. a lot of
it's
really
afro,
nice,
actually.
Awesome.
Are you old enough to have had an afro?
Hair.
Yeah. So then there's people talking to us through the tubes. Jack Madden, our enterprise mobility expert. You are joining us from what I assume is our studio in San Francisco. Is that correct, Jack?
That is correct. I am in the San Francisco office on this unseasonably hot day once again here in San Francisco.
Awesome. And then we're also joined via Skype by Ashok Sankar. Ashok, I actually didn't ask you where you're connecting from.
I'm connecting from Herndon, Virginia, Brian, and thank you very much for inviting me to your show.
Oh, yeah. So... And so Ashok, so you're a lead product strategy, or you lead the product strategy and management for Raytheon Cyber Products, correct?
That's right.
And I want to make two things. So first of all, this is what we call a special edition podcast, where Raytheon has sponsored this podcast. So, but we're not going to make a commercial for Raytheon. Rather, we're going to talk about you've got a lot of ideas about why MDM is actually more about management and not that great for security and what people can do about it. So I want to talk about that. But before we do, Raytheon Cyber Products, can I just say that's like the coolest company name ever? I mean, think about it. Raytheon Cyber Products. That is actually your company, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. We're a wholly owned subsidiary of Raytheon. And our goal or our solution, our goal is essentially to bring information security solutions to the commercial markets. We're pretty much known, as you know, Brian, for our defense and government contracting work.
And like essentially missiles and submarines and stuff.
It's some Tony Stark stuff.
This is at a different layer. We're trying to bring security solutions, cybersecurity, mobile security, insider threat protection solutions such as that, basically based on the pedigree and the experiences we have learned from the defense and intelligence markets. And they are very applicable in today's world, especially in the commercial world, especially when it comes to protecting the nation's infrastructure, financial services, some of the healthcare issues that we are facing from protecting data in those areas.
Good correction that you are not helping the healthcare issues we're facing. You are helping the security of the data
that's
protection.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. I'm glad you clarified.
You know, Ashok, it's interesting because so I lived in Washington, D.C. for 7 years. I worked for Compaq Federal and then for HP, through that merger in the early 2000s. And so I spent 7 years I spent my 3 years there consulting for government agencies and these big defense contractors and, you know, different three-letter agencies, as they say. And it's interesting because the security that these agencies have, and, you know, everyone knows about all the different security standards and, like, the different multiple networks and, like, you know, classified and, like, top secret, secret, you know, all this kind of stuff. And that's something that we as sort of the lay people of the world always think applies to the government and that sort of thing. But that's always, I don't know, like all that security, like big government defense contractors and government and all that sort of thing. I actually didn't realize that, so we said Raytheon Cyber Products is about taking that technology and then bringing it down to the sort of like the normal commercial market. So in order to get into this, I don't need to have a, you know, multi-billion-dollar submarine contract. Like I can actually use the technologies you've developed for the defense industry and apply them to my actual mobile world of like Android and like regular normal corporate life.
That's correct. That's correct. In fact, to go back to one of the things you were mentioning about classified, unclassified networks, we do have a solution in that area, which is what we call cross-domain information assurance, essentially about transferring and accessing information across these multiple security domains or data classification domains, if you will. So how can I take information from secret and view that selectively on a need-to-know, need-to-share basis at the top secret level, et cetera? We've taken some of that pedigree, if you will, and built the solution to enable mobile access for enterprise applications more than so. I prefer to call it more of an enablement solution than a security solution, so to speak.
Oh, that's okay, and that's interesting because there is this whole idea. I mean, we always joke that, not we. I mean, we in IT joke that sort of like ease of use and security are opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
And the most secure computing device is one that is turned off, ground up, and buried under 20 feet of concrete. But that's not super usable. So I feel like a lot of the traditional security focus in IT has been lock, 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 no, 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 no. But what you're saying is you're kind of trying to take it from the other way around, and we have people who want to access their information, and of course, obviously, users today want it from all devices and that sort of stuff. And so you're sort of saying, like, how can you, like, let them into the security environment, sort of like from a access standpoint, not from a no, 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 but okay, you want to use your mobile phones, your Android, whatever. How do you hook that into these actual secure environments?
That is absolutely right. In fact, you talked about user experience, and you know, everyone thinks of these iPhones and Android devices as what actually what created these smartphone paradigms. But actually, we did have them before that, right? If you want to call them Blackberries, you had Palm Trios, compact iPads, etc. One of the things that we found, or you know, everyone knows, is that the iPhones and the Android devices made those devices actually usable. Without even reading a document or a user's guide, if you will, I can kind of intuitively figure out and get something done. That, we think, has essentially also brought this concept of BYOD and people bringing their own devices and saying, hey, if this is so usable and I can be so productive with these devices, why can't I bring that into the corporate enterprise? Well, but with it, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I wonder if you can paint a picture of that for me, because we've seen the difficulties, 2009, 2010, 2011, as the entry of iPhones and Android into the enterprise. But for those of us, like Ryan said, he's worked in the federal sector. I guess that was quite a number of years ago.
You're old.
So for those of us, today that are sort of envisioning, what's going on with mobility in these sectors, sort of paint us a picture of, would it be a good impression to think, okay, it's still very much a BlackBerry and Bez type environment, and the wave of changeover is a few years behind, because of course in these high security environments, there's the IT has a bit more of a more of a say, to say the least. Or did the flood of BYOD happen just at the same time? And I guess paint a picture of how that transition has happened, in this sector versus the more typical enterprise.
Sure. So everyone who's familiar or at least knows something about the government sector, they always have this perception that they're this stodgy old behemoth, right? It takes years and years for them to move. And in a large part, that was very true. Even when it came to technologies such as, virtualization or analytics or cloud computing, et cetera, people moved at a certain pace. With mobility, what has started to happen is that agency employees are starting to bring the mobile devices in themselves. In fact, a recent survey that I saw said that 90% of agency employees are using mobile devices. When they say mobile devices, tablets and phones for some sort of agency use, right? So this is not something that's a step function, meaning it happened overnight. It happened over time. And I think there's a couple of things that are contributing to this. One is the younger workforce that is more tech savvy that's coming in, right? They want to be able to be more productive, and they're kind of used to these kind of devices, so they're bringing it along. And the second thing I think that is happening is that there is a lot of policies that are being put in place, and there's a lot of directives that essentially talk to consolidation, cost-cutting, newer ways of doing things, and essentially extending the citizen experience, if you will. So there's a lot of a confluence of factors, I would say, that are essentially driving this piece. And then,
as I say, it's it also, it's interesting because it comes kind of from above at the politician level too. So back when I was in the federal space, which is, you're right, Jack, 12, 13, 14 years ago, you know, it was a compact, it was the iPac, and it was, you know, BlackBerry, like the pager BlackBerry with a dot matrix screen. And like your work gave that to you. But I feel like even though the government was sort of perceived as being very stodgy, as soon as the iPhone came out and all the congressmen got iPhones, then all of a sudden they're like, why can't I use the iPhones at work? And the whole defense industry, I mean, suddenly had to shift to address these consumer devices.
Oddly enough, OmniSky modems were not that disruptive.
Yeah, I had my compact iPac with the sleeve and the,
Yeah, so what does it, I mean, you're absolutely right. So one of the things that's happening, just like we hear in the commercial enterprise, healthcare, financial services, wherever it might be, IT now has to be, you know, chasing this stuff, right? They don't have necessarily the wherewithal or the luxury to kind of say, I'm going to bring it in an orderly fashion. The mobile devices are there. They have to somehow secure it. They have to somehow secure the data more than the device.
And so this is interesting too, because it is, well, I guess it's the kind of same as commercial, but government always had, and the defense industry always had the ultimate fallback position to say, you know, we are not supporting this device. It does not work with our applications. You know, you have to do everything in your government systems that are on the right networks and all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, if you have your phone and you've got a coworker and it's easy for you to text that person or whatever, just Gmail them a document.
Yeah,
it's a lot. It's so tempting to do that, I guess, because these things are in everyone's pockets now.
When you're saying it's more about the data, arguably the government probably figured out that the data is the thing that's the most sensitive thing over the device long before enterprises did. You know, enterprises were, we've had BlackBerries forever and we have to keep managing them as devices. Let's turn that iPhone into a StarTAC kind of a thing. And, you know, really, we just, you know, they can have the device, just don't get the data.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I guess I was reading about Raytheon stuff, and you know, there's that white paper that Raytheon published last month, where kind of talking about how the commercial industry, the enterprise, so the commercial mobile security industry, is really focusing on MDM. But MDM, if you were to get down to it, that's more for like device management. I mean, it says right there, MDM, mobile device management, not mobile device security. So MDM is great for provisioning, you know, settings on devices and that kind of stuff. But when it comes to security, I mean, yeah, it puts a password on it, but like, is that really security? I don't know.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, in the sense, when MDM first came out, it had a couple of features in there, such as, hey, I could blacklist and whitelist. I could also provide wiping technology. If something goes wrong, I'll come out and wipe it. So it was kind of, the security label was more of a misnomer, but that was the existing paradigm, we think. And, you know, there was a whole scale adoption of that, because I think when people look at the stuff, we tend to go towards, at least from an enterprise perspective, to a comprehensive solution, not necessarily look at across the board and say, hey, what are the different pieces that we need in order to secure what we're really trying to secure? So when MDM came out, It was a great solution, because it kind of helped you provision, it helped you manage the device, you know, helped you control the device, and it also helped you to some extent make sure that the data that you got, I wouldn't even say protected, but kind of managed in some sort of way. And I think that's what happened with MDM, and it pretty much took over the you know, the label of a security solution. In fact, there was an Information Week report last year that said 72% of the people said that they are getting an MDM solution in-house for security reasons.
And of course, there's that perception, you know, you know, we've thought of for a long time, the very basic compliance checkbox top on the list. Okay, is the device encrypted? Can we remote wipe the device? Can we remote lock the device? And those were, you know, among the first MDM features that got implemented. So I'm sure there were a lot of people that said, oh, we can remote wipe it and it's encrypted, so we're all set, done.
Yeah, and early on, too, it wasn't everybody, it was just compared to BlackBerry. It wasn't called MDM. It was just like, hang on, these users have this iPhone that can do all these different things, but I can't manage it at all, so we need something to do that. And also, that was the only thing that we could call mobile security at the time. So it became a security solution no matter what.
Yeah, because going back to that thing where people wanted to buy security. Like, we always knew that security would sell, you know, and it's like, hey, do you want to, secure these things? Yes. Well, what tools do we have? Oh, we have MDM. So yeah, MDM is, if I say MDM is security, you'll buy it. Yes. MDM is security.
And then we have heard a lot of, these stories about where when people try to wipe, they wipe the wrong thing. That started to cause some problems, if you will, you know.
Collateral damage.
How would you like your 9-year-old daughter's ballet pictures to be wiped accidentally? And what do you tell your wife, right? Those are all real use cases that we have heard from people saying why MDMs fall short.
Yeah. Go on, Jack.
I was going to say, you know, funny thing is that, you know, that's been as recently as just like 2 months ago. I've been seeing articles in the, I think it was the Wall Street Journal just 2 months ago, saying like, you bring your phone to work, you could end up with your pictures being, you know, being remote wiped. And, you know, we saw that on articles, you know, when Exchange ActiveSync support was first opened up for the iPhone in 2008. And now it's 2014, 6 years later, and there's still that fear.
Yes.
So how about mobile application management? I mean, because, you know, mobile device management sort of came into the picture 4 years ago, and now we've got mobile app management where we can take those same MDM technologies but apply them just to the application level instead of to the device level. So does that sort of solve this? Because now I can have my ballet pictures on the device but still protect my corporate applications?
Well, it might be a solution in certain cases, but MAM is more about, the way we see it, is about creating a consistent set of policies around application publishing, being able to provision those applications to the devices. And where we see this paradigm that's come along, evolved from MDM, is with secure containers. What people are trying to do is that, well, let me give you a secure space, you know, whatever that space might be, on your device where you can now have your apps and your data, and it doesn't touch anything outside. That way, I'm providing you with a very secure area for you to work your business apps from. So that's what is evolved. But the point here is the data and the apps are still resident on that device and still, you know, liable to be compromised, if you will.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because when you describe this, you know, there's this concept of secure containers that wrap your corporate apps and your corporate data. You just described, I think, 130 different products. That is the approach. Yeah. But you read, I mean, like, malware is crazy. Like, the mobile malware and how they, especially in the, I know it's a little bit more prevalent in the Android environment, where they're putting, you know, Trojan horses into apps from the Google Play Store. And, you know, it's funny because if you root the phone, I mean, whatever you do to unlock that data and those apps on your device, if your phone has root level Trojan, then when you unlock it for you as the user to use it, you just unlocked it for the Trojan.
That's correct.
So, we had MDM 2010 onwards, MAM to sort of, you know, from 2012, let's say, onwards. And we have all these, you know, remote wiping and encryption, but that's all still on the device. I'm guessing from the way that you sort of say that's still on the device that at Raytheon, which I'm going to say Raytheon Cyber Products, because again, that's an awesome name. So I'm going to say it from now on that way. So at Raytheon Cyber Products, that's not your approach to how you handle security on these mobile devices.
That's absolutely right. In fact, our lessons, if you will, from our background in defense and intel has taught us something very different. Well, one thing that I also wanted to mention is that even though we have moved on to securing the device, you know, gone on to secure containers, when I go and, you know, go to conferences, when I go talk to customers, when I kind of ask these people, what applications are you really using on your device, right? It's still email, contacts, calendar, and some people might say documents, right? GPS is something that they say. What is interesting for me is that 10, 12 years ago, I was involved in the mobile industry with the Palm Trios and Compact iPacks and Blackberries and things like that. That was all about email and PIM, And after all this evolution, this paradigm-shifting technology from Google and from Apple and things like that, we're still accessing email and PIM and maybe some documents, right? What the enterprise user wants to do is essentially want to be able to access work information. So if I'm in healthcare, I want to be able to access patient records. If I'm in defense, I might want to look at some schematics of an aircraft, right? And then the list goes on and on, risk management and analysis and financial services, and case management in the case of, you know, law enforcement. So there's multiple pieces that, you know, or I'm sorry, usage scenarios that you can think of. So people are still afraid or skeptical about putting that kind of data on the device. When we talk to people and ask them, so why aren't you running your case management application on this? A law enforcement agency, even a time and attendance app, can be a classified application. And so why aren't you running those things on the mobile devices? Because they're so easy to access. What's stopping you? Just wrap your application, send it over. And they kind of pause. They're going to say, no, it's not secure enough. I don't think I can send my data to that to that device yet, right? So our premise is essentially to say, if data at rest on that device is really the problem, and today's technologies don't solve them, then why even bother putting the data on the device, right? So we virtualize the mobile, the native mobile apps in the back end, cloud, data center, whatever you want to call it, and then securely redisplay that app onto the device. Now, we're not proposing or thinking that this is a solution to all your problems. You may still be happy with your contacts and your email running on the device itself, but there are going to be certain types of information based on the sensitivity or the proprietary nature of that information. You might say, I need to protect it in one place and not have it, you know, spilling all over the place, so to speak.
So your tweet before we started this thing that said it was VMI, which is like VDI, but with an M.
Virtual mobile infrastructure instead of virtual desktop infrastructure.
Yeah, but it's
hey, we know about that.
Remote app for Android.
It literally is.
Literally,
right?
Literally app for Android.
So, Ashok, to be clear, you're talking about native mobile apps. So this is not what, like, this is, we've been using Android as example. So with the Raytheon Cyber Products offering, you're literally running Android apps in a data center and just remoting the UI of the Android app down to the device.
That's correct. That's correct. So we termed it VMI because when we initially started talking to people, everybody said, oh, so you do VDI. You do what Citrix does. And we kept saying, no, we don't do what Citrix does, meaning, yes, the virtualization and the redisplay concept, but it's not the desktop application because there is somebody who's a market leader who's already doing that. What we were trying to do was express the fact that we were, you know, instantiating a native mobile app in the back end and virtualizing it. And we sat around, we talked about it, and we said, VMI sounds great because now I got the D out and put the M in.
But this is, for a 92-year-old defense company,
pretty progressive.
You nailed the acronym also.
Yeah.
Like, you actually got it right. Like, this is exactly what it is. Everyone knows what VDI is, and if you call it VMI, that's actually 100% accurately describes what you're doing.
Right. So you might just happened. Blow past it and go, marketing term. But no, this is actually what it is.
That's legit. Yeah.
Absolutely right. So for a 90-year-old defense company, I mean, this is what is exciting about what we're trying to do is that even though we are known for our defense stuff, the experiences and what we have learned, you know, trying to solve problems in command and control and in mission control, you know, very highly sensitive and critical environments, this is what we're trying to bring to the enterprise market to solve problems.
I'm just saying, though, if you you better have good Wi-Fi because when you're 30 stories below ground in a bunker, you're not going to have very good 4G.
Well, one of the things is our solution works, you know, whether it's 4G, 3G, or primarily in the wireless environment, right? As long as you have access points, right? We work in that environment as well. In fact, a lot of the direction that we're seeing in some of the large enterprises or agencies we have spoken with, you know, they are trying to go wireless. That's part of their strategic plan so they can get out of wiring the buildings. There's a lot of, you know, logistical issues, you know, that they get away from when they go wireless. So they're kind of looking at it. And we think we're right on track to go and support that kind of environment.
You know, I'm envisioning Brynell's jokes about the copper mesh to, you know, contain wireless networks I'm envisioning you know, these rooms with their individual you know, wireless networks, with each room contained in its own copper mesh.
Honestly, that's probably a product that Raytheon sells.
But it has a 15-letter acronym, though.
But no, actually, what's happening with DoD and with Intel communities now is that if you look at them, they've made some impressive strides with regard to, you know, mobile protection profiles, wireless access, you know, best practices, things of that nature. That's why initially I also mentioned that, you know, the old government speak of, you know, it's going to take me 10, 15 years to get anywhere is kind of going away. And there's, you know, there's a lot of changes that are going on. Still more to be done, but I think it's quite impressive the strides they've made, especially in the mobile environment.
Yeah, and, you know, I can't remember offhand, but I'm thinking of a few, you know, various documents that I've come across, you know, over the years that are – you know, various government entities' guides to, you know, implementing. Well, I guess going back to the mobile device management guides to implementing iOS and Android mobile device management. And Brian, I think you mentioned the there was always the UK Parliament IT website that has. You know, that has these guides on mobility and consumerization, and, you know, those all seem like very progressive things.
In the UK.
Yeah, we have them as here as well, mobile protection profiles. We have a mobility office within the Intel community. NSA has a much publicized commercial solutions for classified program. You know, the idea behind it is, how can we take what is available commercially and essentially from a time-to-market perspective and also the innovation perspective, how can we quickly adopt it to satisfy some of the goals, mission goals that they have in government? So
can we talk about how this works? Like, so you're running an Android app. First of all, mm-hmm. I assume that this only works with Android apps, but I also assume you can remote an Android app to an iOS device, right?
That's correct. So yeah, it's like, two for one.
Yeah. And I assume it only works with Android apps, because I'm guessing that Apple doesn't allow, you know, their apps to run on a data center and be remoted.
Yeah,
yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
But if I'm an iPhone, but if it's a work app, I mean, an Android app is built for small screen and touch. So if I hit a button for my, you know, Raytheon Cyber Products, you know, VMI client on my iPhone, mm-hmm. if I'm remoting to an Android app, as long as it's the real Android app meant for a phone, I mean, I don't care.
That's correct.
So how does this actually work? Like, I'm assuming you don't have, like, stacks of, you know, Samsung tablets sitting in a data center somewhere. Like, can you actually run Android
Samsung
on a...
Samsung would love that.
But how, like, how's it work in the back end?
Yeah, so basically what we have is, you know, a server in the back end, and then, you know, we spin up VMs, right? And the VM essentially runs these Android instances within that. Within that piece, it's either application specific or we can run the entire device, so to speak. All right. So what we do is, when a user, and we have a redisplay app that shows up on your device, let's say you, Brian, are the user, right? When you open up your, or when you power on your device, there's a little icon that says Raytheon Trusted Access Mobile. When you click on it, you know, it essentially creates a tunnel, an outer tunnel is what we call it. We support, you know, nested tunnels for additional security. And what that essentially does is goes to a resource locator and basically says, hey, what can Brian access? And gets that information back. And then a second tunnel kind of gets out there and gets you the apps that you really want to run. And then once I've created my VM in the back end, you know, the reason I bring that up is because there's a little bit of latency for the VM to kind of get spun up, maybe 2-3 seconds, something like that. And then everything else is pretty much, you know, instantaneous from there on. So that's how we work. We essentially run the VMs in the back end, and each person gets a VM spun up there.
Are the apps on the back end aware of the local device capabilities? I mean, whether I'm using an iPhone 5 versus a, you know, some Samsung phablet or... a tablet of some sort? I mean, are we getting the same application with the same aspect ratio and the same dots that's just expanded?
Yes. We pretty much have to do, we may have to do some tweaking, if you will, based on, you know, the tablet or the smartphone that you may have to talk to your aspect ratio question. But otherwise, it's pretty much the same.
And then I assume if I flip the device sideways, your client agent on my in my pocket can tell the host that it flipped sideways, then I can rotate the screen there too.
That's correct.
Cool. Yeah, so I guess when you think about it, there are – when you think of all of the – when you think of sending a remote display, you know, for a desktop, mm-hmm. you have you have mouse, keyboard, you know, sometimes USB redirection, sometimes webcam redirection. But when you're on a mobile device, you know, going from a mobile display to a remote mobile app, you have touch events, you have multi-touch, you have screen orientation, you yep. have a wide range of screen sizes, you have location, you have, I don't know, a camera to redirect. I'm just thinking of, you know, of mobile device frameworks that could possibly have to be redirected for, you know, for a certain application. So I'm actually curious about the what's in there in the remote display protocol and what you're able to implement to redirect and all that.
So basically what we do is we redirect any gesture that you make, if you will, on that screen. So if you kind of flip your fingers to expand, contract, whatever, it goes back and, you know, pretty much gives you the response, just like you would have it on the device.
So it'll do multi-touch and everything?
Yes, yes. I mean, today we essentially, you know, this is our first release of the product that we've come out with, and so we essentially support some of the more common gestures, and as we move forward, you know, we will be supporting other pieces as well.
So if I'm a commercial customer, take me through how this actually is implemented, because I like when I buy Trusted Access Mobile,
yeah.
TAM, right? Yeah, Trusted Access Mobile. So when I buy the product, mm-hmm. Do you ship me? Is it software? Is it like a VM that I install into my data center, and then I sort of like manage my own Android instances in my data center, or how does that work exactly?
So basically, what we ship you is the software for the VMI that runs in the back end. Then there is a mobile gateway in the middle, and you get software for that as well. And then there is a redisplay client that gets provisioned by the user. I mean, for each user at the time of, you know, yeah. getting provisioned, if you will. You know, like Brian gets provisioned, and at that time, the redisplay client kind of gets dropped on it. It's not something you kind of download from Google Play or something like that, because this is a end-to-end solution. So, yes, so that's what you get essentially. And then the apps, you know, as you would essentially publish on a device, you would just publish it in the back end instead, right? So it's an installation process that you would go through.
So the, so really, like this is interesting, because this is not replacing MDM or MAM.
Right.
In mm-hmm. fact, I probably might use this with MDM and MAM.
Absolutely right.
And I can use, and I would imagine I can use MDM or MAM to provision down the redisplay clients onto my actual users. And I assume I can also, if I'm using MDM or MAM, I can add the Android instances in my data center into that. And so I'm sort of like managing, it's like if I got 100 users, I'm managing their Android environments, but those Android environments, I might be managing them via MAM, but they just happen to be living in my data center.
Right. And this means that you don't have to give all of the work applications or provide all of the work applications via something that requires a connection. There may be some less sensitive things that you can deploy directly to the device with MAM.
Yeah.
And then some more secure things that you can keep in the data center.
And that's kind of like the whole notion of like PIM and Outlook and email, that kind of stuff. Maybe I want that stuff to be on the actual device, but my patient records or my, you know, defense contracting.
Airplane schematics. Yeah.
That thing is living in the data center on that version of Android.
That's right. So if you've made investments in MDM and MAM, I mean, yeah, you know, we will continue to coexist with them. In fact, we do not interfere with any of them, right? MDM is for a certain purpose. It's about managing the device the way we look at it. And like you also said, from an MAM perspective, there are going to be certain applications you say, you know what, from a sensitivity perspective, I don't have to go through this, you know, process of trying to host it in the back end and then redisplaying it. I'll just have it on the device. And there are going to be certain applications, the higher sensitivity level you may want to host in the back end.
I'm envisioning things like, you know, obviously instead of emailing people documents, you know, various applications that, you know, you email the other user link in it and the link may show up in their local PIM client, but if they're is there some sort of, you know, document association or something that could happen where I could be in a local local client and it would redirect me and prompt the remote connection to be made and then launch me into the remote app?
So if I had a local app that's outside of our redisplay container, right, physically, because the application's running the back end, and the reason it's doing that is because of security reasons. So having a local app, when I go click on it, kind of open a document, if you will, through that redisplay client would essentially flout a security policy. So today, there is no crossover from a local app running on the device to the remote app that's running in the back end. It has to be within that context.
And that's like a true network classification level separation, essentially, at that point.
Yes, because what can happen is that if I could open the document from inside, which I've said is secret or confidential or whatever reason, if I can now, then the next step would be to download it onto my device, and then I could email it to a personal account, which essentially, yeah, you know, defeats the whole
purpose. The whole point. Yeah. So like the open in. So yeah, like right, within your secure Android environment, I can use open in all I want, but it's opening in on that, yes, remote data center instance of Android, not on my device.
That's correct.
Right, right. Well, I'm an almost to a, you know, of course, with all the, you know, all the data remaining in the remote application, but just, you know, I'm thinking like custom URL schemes to just trigger that, trigger the, you know, the client to go and open the remote.
The thing is, though, hopefully there wouldn't be any URL. Like, how would you be getting access to that URL outside of your secure environment anyway? Well, like, hopefully that should never happen, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, if I'm on, like I said earlier, if I'm on a local app, you know, it doesn't know the existence of the secure container or this, yeah, or this redisplay app. So it doesn't know where to go necessarily. So if you click on a particular link, it's going to try to look for its local browser sources or wherever it would go in order to, you know, fire up that, fire up the browser and bring the page from that URL. It can't cross over into the redisplay client.
It's funny because, right, because the traditional use case is, someone emails you a link to a file and it can then open in the right environment. But here it's like, if someone emails you the submarine schematics, mm-hmm, and Jack, you're asking, hey, when I click on that, should it open in my secure environment? You take a step back. It's like, wait a minute, why are the submarine schematics not in the secure environment?
Well, no.
Like,
I'm saying
should,
if they
got that in the first place.
If they email, email a link, like a custom URL schemes that apps use to call one another, and so, you know, this, like, say, hey, I have this document prepared for you that you need to see, that's, you know, in this remote Android environment, so it's in there, and click on this link and it will use, you know, the custom URL scheme, the app to app communication, to go and tell the remote display client to launch.
Yeah.
But even if having, it sounds like even having that minimal level of, you know, a custom URL scheme that can even have another app tell the remote display app to launch, even if there's no actual local information on that device and it's just that nudge to tell it open, it sounds like in, you know, these, with these security requirements, even that degree would be not acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first problem would be if somebody's emailing submarine schematics. That is the first problem.
Yeah, because what happens for those of you who are not familiar, like anyone listening who's not familiar with the way these like multiple networks work, each multiple network has its own email systems too. So like you would actually have like three different email clients with three different email addresses at three different network levels, and so the. So you wouldn't, like, if you were emailing the link, like, hey, here's the link to the submarine schematics, and that was, like, top secret, I'd be emailing that to you on your top secret email client, which may not be accessible, like the top secret email client is you're not using your device native email for that. You know, that would be like an email client running in your Android VM as well.
So then it's not like when, of course, we are at the opposite end of the spectrum, emailing each other links to Google Docs. So it's not like when I email you a link to a Google Doc and say, hey, go check this out.
Well, you can. It's just that you're emailing that. The email client I'm using is my top secret email client, not my regular email client. And so I'm emailing it from my top secret email. And that email client is not internet connected. It only connects to other people who are also in the top secret email server, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. So this is what we call, you know, multi-level security or cross-domain, right? Where if I'm on the secret level and I get a secret level email, I can't necessarily go down, browse down, or go up. Of course, there are transfer solutions for that, right, which can make that happen. But that said, our mobile solution today is more at a single level, meaning it doesn't not, even though we will have a portion of it that can do the browse down and access and transfer across domains, they also work at a single level, meaning like unclassified level or at a secret level or anything like that. Usually in commercial enterprises, as you guys know, you know, healthcare or financial services, they just, all the networks are flat, meaning they're all at the same level. And, you know, that's what the solution is kind of geared towards.
So the, again, when you wouldn't even be able to email it to the device in the first place. So it's kind of a not thing. To go back to the back end a little bit, so you know, you talked about you've got a virtual machine image, and does this run on like ESX or something? Like, do I just put this in my regular server virtualization infrastructure, or is it its own like native install? Like, what do I actually install where in my data center?
So basically, I could have a box back there on which I could write, I would run a Linux environment, right? On the Linux environment, we would just spin up these Android VMs.
Okay, and then that
KVM then or something, or Xen or something not common?
It is essentially the KVMs, I believe, that get run in that CentOS environment. And then each one has your Android VM that runs in there.
And then could I run that entire thing? I could run that Linux VM. I mean, I could run the Linux environment that creates all the Android VMs. Could I run that within ESX as its own VM, or do I install that bare metal on a box?
Well, I don't believe we have tested that yet. So I'm not sure I can answer that question.
Although I guess honestly,
it sounds like a bare metal solution.
Yeah, at that level of security, you're probably not running ESX anyway.
And I don't know if you can nest KVM in a virtual machine anyway.
So
what about the protocol? Sorry to cut you off. But I mean we're very familiar with a half a dozen or so remote desktop protocols out there, but a lot of times we find solutions like this that are new to the market are, they've developed their own. So are you using any common protocols that have been ported to Android, or did you create your own?
Well, I believe we use Tight VNC, which is the protocol that we use for the secure redisplay.
Okay.
And it's through the nested tunnels that I mentioned to you earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, because you'd have to nest that, because there's, you know, prolific as VNC is, like, out there, that's not the right word, but you know, it's still not, I mean, I've never known it to be that secure, so but maybe it is in government circles and that, but if you nest it inside of a tunnel or two or three, then I suppose that's how you have the security.
Yeah, because it goes from the client to the, like, the broker, essentially, the gateway, and that's a secure connection, like secure connection number one, and then that jumps back to the actual VMs. Mm-hmm. So Ashok, there's a bunch of questions in the chat room. Is this a current product? Like, do you actually have customers using this in production today, or is this a brand new product?
Yeah, it's a brand new product. In fact, we launched it 2 weeks ago. We kind of tested it in-house, right? And we also had some evaluations done with a couple of agencies. So yeah, I mean, it is essentially a product that is productized in all sense of the commercial sense, so to speak.
And but there are customers using this today?
Well, we don't have any customers. We don't have any customers yet. Of course, we've just brought this to market.
This is literally brand new. Yeah.
Yes.
And then
that should
something...
not deter anybody, because we have tested very well.
It is from Raytheon.
This is the whole point of having this podcast. It's like we launched this brand new product. Now we're getting the word out.
Yeah.
And so this,
like buy some company for this, or do you license it, or
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Did you build this product yourself at Raytheon?
Yes, we did. Essentially, it took about a couple of years, 2 years plus. Essentially, the engineers who were working on some of the higher grade information security products came together. And originally, when we got together, the idea was to kind of solve this for the defense and intel community. And as you would expect, in the cross domain community, you know, how do I keep data off the device? And we also looked at it. As we started to look at it, it started to make more and more sense because, you know, at one point in time, whether we like think it or not, in 2 or 3 years' time, these devices, smartphones and tablets, they're going to be just another endpoint, just like your netbooks or your laptops, you know, and then the shift is going to be towards data security, not necessarily device security, right? Probably would have exhausted those options. And so that's how that was the evolving thought, if you will, behind it as we were looking through this.
And then another question, which we sort of addressed, but asking about for the VPN tunnel. So is it, someone's asking, what are you using for the VPN tunnel? Is it a micro VPN tunnel?
Well, basically what we're using is we followed, you know, for the government markets, the Suite B standards. It's a set of encryption algorithms, if you will, that the NSA has kind of blessed and let us do it. But we have taken some of those pieces out that we can't necessarily bring to the commercial market, but they are at the same grade. In order to provide those nested tunnels, and today we use TLS, right? In order to get through, and then in the back end we use IPsec.
All right, cool. And it's interesting, so because this Trusted Access Mobile product, it's using what we're calling VMI, so like virtual mobile infrastructure instead of virtual desktop infrastructure. But it's like VDI for Android. So with VDI, you get all sorts of other advantages. Like, we've been focusing on the security advantage in this conversation so far, but you get things like device independence. Like I said, you know, an iOS client can run an Android app, can access an Android app just as easily.
Yeah, that alone is cool.
And then when iPhone 8 comes out, when iPhone 9 comes out, when this Android comes out, it's like Samsung version of Android, different than Motorola version of Android, different than Google version of Android, different than...
Even different kernels.
Of Android.
Different versions of Android.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you want to run this on 4.0... you can, even if everybody has this device, it's 4.2 and the app doesn't work on it.
So in addition, I mean, and granted, I think this is kind of like killing an ant with a sledgehammer if you're using this for your app portability solution, but you get that for free with this.
But you can do it.
Yeah, and like the whole like BYOD thing, like, I mean, any device, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just a simple client on the device that's probably the same for everything. And so now it doesn't matter what brand, what size, what device. Like, you have true kind of BYO device independence. Mm-hmm.
It's a very important point you make, and the reason I say that is because when we talked to a lot of people, first they said, well, let me take the Windows app, wrap it, optimize it for the mobile device. So you're essentially taking a keyboard and mouse optimized device and trying to use it on a device that's got completely different sensor attributes, right? That's one. And then they said, well, let me just use cloud apps, access it through a web UI, and from talking to many people, agencies and commercial customers, if you will, what we're learning is that those attempts are kind of falling short, so to speak, right? So there is a movement, or there's a realization slowly, that says we have to build native apps, whether it's iOS or Android, and that costs money because there's a question of development talent, if you will.
Yeah.
And then there is the question of, okay, if I build it once, am I going to move to the next? One of the key things people forget is whenever we talk about apps, we talk about these commercial apps that are sitting there, maybe something like a Facebook, Twitter, Salesforce, whatever it is. But a lot of enterprises, their IP lives in these legacy apps that they've kind of either put together somehow or created from scratch, their IT department, working on it because they couldn't find anything outside. Now they have to take that and say, okay, how am I going to make this, mobile friendly? And that's the big challenge they're facing. And it's going to cost a lot of money for them to do it. And if you have to do it twice because people are bringing Android devices, iOS devices, and, maybe Windows devices one day, that's a tall order from a cost perspective. And by trying to do it, do it once but use twice, I think that goes to helping solve the cost problem.
And the time problem too. Time to get your app out. But yeah, so the idea is, you know, you can just decide, okay, we need to spend the time and money to build a mobile app, but we can build just the Android version of the mobile app, and now it's working from everything.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you have clients for? So you got Android and iOS clients. Do you have BlackBerry, Windows Phone, those other platforms?
No, we don't have a BlackBerry one. You know, we don't have a Windows one. We're kind of focusing on the Android initially, primarily because it's just easy to develop towards, right? Yeah. And so we took that up. iOS is our next step, you know, trying to take this piece and run on the iOS client. And we are right now, in about 30 days, 40 days, you know, we'll have something that is demonstrable in that particular environment. And then after that, we will start to look at Windows, you know. We want to see the evolution of the space because, as you guys know, this space is evolving really, really fast. And reports seem to show that iOS and Android will keep the market share, you know, compared to the other form factors or, I'm sorry, other operating systems. But we're closely monitoring these to see what we need to do.
How about application compatibility? One of the questions asked if there's an SDK for the apps. And I mean, I can take that one step further. What applications can we actually install in the VMs? Is there some sort of modification that has to be done for this to work with VMI, or does any off-the-shelf app work? Or
oh, right. And another question, yeah, with the off-the-shelf apps is, do the VMs have? Can I install an app from the Google Play Store or another commercial Android app store? And in the case of Google apps, does the VM utilize the Google services infrastructure that that some apps rely on?
So from an apps perspective, we don't have to make any modifications as long as they can run on an Android operating system. In fact, the other day, just last week, we ran the Lotus Traveler app and connect it to our Lotus Notes backend, and we didn't have to do any modifications for that as well. So what these guys are looking for is essentially in APK format, from what I understand, and then you know you pretty much run it in the backend. There is no major modifications that you need to do.
The application has to work on devices. I've run into situations before on like Android mini PCs where an app from Google Play won't be supported because it doesn't have a camera or a touchscreen, even though the app itself doesn't need it. It was just sort of in the default configuration package when they created the APK file. So, I mean, do we run into that too, or can you emulate? Say you have a touchscreen, have a camera.
Well, if it is native, if you will, to the app, and if there's a limitation there, then that's the limitation. We don't impose any external limitations. So we essentially let it be 100% native, meaning like run as it is, or whatever constraints has come up, it comes with. Those are the constraints.
Are you using the Android open source project? Like what flavor of Android runs in the data centers with this?
Well, basically right now we support 4.2 and above.
And then someone's also asking in the chat room about dual persona. And I don't quite know the question, but I guess this sort of is by definition a dual persona solution because your user has a fully running, like every user has their own Android VM, right?
Right.
So that's
correct.
That's your sort of secure
second
work persona. Environment. That is a persona.
Yeah.
And then your device, you've got its native persona. And then, like I said, if you also wanted to use MAM with this, this doesn't preclude that. I imagine it works. It's a nice complement to MAM.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, I've always said there are a lot of different ways that you can define dual persona, and it's really all sorts of different forms of technologies that allow different layers of, you know, basically anything that addresses individual applications instead of merely being entire device level policies. And of course, by default, this is like you said, this is a form of that.
Yeah, I mean, in the dual persona case, you know, there's multiple ways of doing it. I mean, for example, BlackBerry, I think it is the 10 that had the dual persona capability work and play, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
There are others who provide hypervisor type solutions, you know, so you've got your own little space, right? I could just spin up based on the hypervisor. I could just spin up the VMs on the mobile device itself. No, I've got multiple personas there. And then there are others who are essentially partitioning the device from what we understand in order to have the dual persona. So in our case, our redisplay client, if you will, once you click on it, you enter this work area. It's completely separate from anything else that is on your device.
It's a completely logical representation of what it's actually like to work in defense.
So needless to say, there's no cutting and pasting between the remote app and the host.
That's correct. You can't do that.
A feature.
You know, one of the things I was going to say earlier was that, you know, when we demonstrate this to people, it takes a while for them to understand what we're demonstrating because they think that the app is still running on the device. It was like, what is this guy showing me? It looks like the app's just running there. We have to tell them it's actually not running on that device. It's running somewhere else in Herndon, Virginia in the back end.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to use with Citrix in 1998.
Yeah, this is like breaking up with a girl who'd never dated anyone before. You can use all that same old stuff.
VDI marketing materials from...
amazing. Yeah. And it's perfect. Yeah. And the demo actually works that explanation actually works because it's so obvious, but so new.
Yeah.
And I guess this also would work with, you know, we're focusing on Android apps, you know, native Android apps, but I guess it would also work for web apps. If you've got web apps that you want to deliver securely that are sort of on the same security domain, the same sort of network level as your Android VMs. So, you could run a browser in your Android VM securely, and then that could have, you know, whatever it needs to do to get access to these internal secure web apps, and then you use your redisplay technology to, you know, send that down to the actual device via the same tunnel.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, we can also support VDI in that format, and all we have to do is just in order to get it through is use our gateway. Right, because that's the transport mechanism, if you will, all the way from the device to the back end. So as long as we can speak to the VDI environment, the back end, we can pull that in as well.
So you run like the Citrix Android client in your secure VM?
We can, yes.
Oh, that's cool. So now you don't have to worry about...
So very important to understand. We don't run it on our VM itself, but if there is a Citrix environment at the back end that we can connect through our gateway, yes, we can run through it. In other words...
So you're actually remoting HDX through the tunnel.
Yeah, we can do that.
Double
hopping.
So the tunnel is... So I only need to worry about one pathway to my device, which is your secure tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can put your own redisplay technology through there, as well as, you know, HDX, for example, if it's Citrix.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a VPN for the device, which can be used for, you know, whatever you need it to.
Yeah. So we can essentially pull any kind of application that is back there, whether it's a virtual application that's written for Windows and app wrapped, whether it's a cloud app or a browser app, like you mentioned, or if it's a native mobile app.
So let me tell you what, dude, this is actually legitimately cool. I came into this podcast expecting to be super boring, and this is really, really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been writing, Gabe and I have been, you know, doing Citrix since the 90s, and this is, you know, this is remoting. I like this a lot. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is really, really exciting for us because we originally, when we started to bring that up, we said, okay, let's go back to our traditional base in Intel and defense and talk to them about it. In fact, when we talked to a couple of people there and also talked to a couple of people in the industry analyst community, they said, you know, you guys need to go and talk to financial services about this and to healthcare. And we told them, well, there's no point because these guys are already using MDM. And they said, no, that's only for this. So the whole conversation started around that. When we started to talk to people, took it to RSA and demonstrated it to people, we got some really, really, you know, great responses from them. So we're really, really excited about this.
So what are the next steps? Because we actually just hit our hour. Like, we're out of time. So next steps for people. So it's Raytheon Cyber Products is a company. The product is called Trusted Access Mobile, TAM. If someone wants to, you know, do you have an eval? Do they call you? Is there a website to download? What are the next steps for someone? Yeah,
absolutely. Just go to www.raytheon.com/cyberproducts. And then, you know, essentially you will be able to get to us. Or there's also a contact number in there. I think I believe it's an 866 number. I don't have it memorized, and they could call us, and then we will be there to answer any questions, get you an eval, whatever you need to get started.
Are there videos or anything of this in action?
Absolutely. It's up there. We've got a lot of material to learn more on the website, raytheon.com/cyberproducts. And you've got white papers, the data sheets, a very, very cool video that kind of explains, the premise of the solution, how it works, and what value it brings to the enterprise customer.
So our very active question asker in the chat room here has asked a few times about FIPS. It went up the screen. FIPS 140-2. Compliance? Yeah, has it been validated for that?
Yes. Well, we're not validated yet, but we do comply with it.
Okay.
Wow. Well, this is super awesome. So, I guess congrats. This is a 2-week-old product, so congrats on getting this out to the market. This is definitely something that I want to sort of keep tabs on. So, for sure, keep us up to date with your new versions. I'm an iOS user, so as soon as you have an iOS client, you said the next 30 to 60 days, we're going to show that. That'll be awesome.
Same here. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. We'll be the first ones we'll call. So we want some people who can test it out, and really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to me about this.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking the time to reach out and
launching it
via our BrianMadden.com live podcast. So that is Ashok Sankar, who's the lead of product strategy and management for Raytheon Cyber Products, and specifically this trusted access mobile products. So Ashok, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you, guys.
Jack, in San Francisco, thanks for taking the time. Gabe, thank you for lending me your office to do this. And thanks
anytime.
And Justin, you're back there somewhere making us sound good. So thank you as well. So, and finally, to everyone who listens, thanks for listening.
And to Anon 4829 for all those awesome questions.
So the recording of the show will be made available within the next 10, 15 minutes or so. We'll update the show notes, and then people can listen to it. It'll be blasted out to all of our podcast subscribers. So from Omaha, Nebraska, this is Brian Madden. Thanks again for listening.